Welcome to Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You, the podcast that focuses on Christians that are active in everyday life. Join in as we speak to everyone from successful business owners to educators to athletes about their faith and how it helps them reach out and revolutionize those around them to do the same. And now get ready to roar with your host, the voice of manifestation, John Fuller.
Hey, Roar Nation, John B. Fuller here, and I am fired up and really excited about today because this has been an ongoing conversation about doing the show for almost a year. I will dive into that in just a second. So, that being said, I have brought on my new friend, Alex. Alex, you ready to roar, my brother?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Come on, let's do this. Okay, so Roar Nation, check this out. Alex McElroy is an international speaker. He's a teacher, author, and blogger, and he's a pastor of education at NLCSE in Chicago. I'll let him give you the breakdown on that. With over 20,000 members. For over 13 years, Alex has taught youth, young adults, and trained hundreds of ministers to teach accurately and effectively. Alex focuses his teaching on leadership, apologetics, and living with purpose. We love that. He's also married with his wife, Casey, for 10 years, and he has two daughters, ages 4 and 7. All right, so Roar Nation, this is what's really cool about this. So for the last probably year, and Alex can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not totally sure. It seemed like it's a while. So Alex reached out to me. We get a lot of people that reach out and ask us to be on the show or have suggestions. And we get so busy, obviously, around here doing stuff that people get scheduled out or sometimes forgotten. What I love about Alex is he has stayed persistent with keeping in touch with me and getting on here. So this has been a long-awaited show, right, Alex?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
It's been good stuff.
I'm excited to be here, and I thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Alex, let's dive in. I was really excited. One of the videos that you saw I saw on YouTube. I watched it about apologetics, some of the stuff you do. You were speaking, I believe, at a college, which was really good. So that being said, why don't you dive into a little bit as far as like what you do and who you are, kind of a 30,000 foot view as we break who you are.
Okay. So yeah, once again, thank you for having me. Basically, outside of being an associate pastor at the church, NLCSE stands for New Life Covenant Southeast. Yeah, so that's to clarify that. And I think the reason I reached out to you in the first place is when I saw the podcast and heard it and I was listening to it, it excited me because essentially my purpose in life is to help people discover and walk in their God-given purpose. Amen. So I write a blog called RelentlessPursuitOfPurpose.com, and I help people, like I said, discover and walk in their purpose and deal with the obstacles that are going to come in the process of fulfilling that purpose. So there's going to be some hindrances. There's going to be some obstacles. I'm sure we'll get into this in a minute, but this has been a really rough year for me, but it's been a really great year for me too. So, there's always going to be those obstacles, but the question is, what do you do when those obstacles come? You can turn and walk away. You can give up. You can go do something that's a little easier. But the thing that I realize is that if God has given you a purpose, and I believe I can even prove that almost scientifically, if that's what he's done, then to not do it is disobedient. It's disrespectful to a certain degree as well. And so I get it. It's hard. And that's why I want to help people. One thing I never do is tell someone what their purpose is, because only God can do that. Only the creator, only the manufacturer can tell you what was in his mind when he created you. But I can help you through a series of questions, through some advice, through just coaching and talking it out, help you to navigate how to perfect or to fulfill that purpose. And so the other part of what I do is, as a speaker, not just speaking on purpose and writing on that, and have a book out and working on my next one, but I'm an apologist. And, you know, we'll probably dive more into what that is. But essentially what an apologist is somebody who gives an accurate defense of the faith, often through scientific, historical, archaeological, or philosophical evidence. So the myth that is being sold to our kids in schools is that you have to choose between science or your faith, or you have to put this in this corner and this in this corner, and that's a lie. And our kids oftentimes go to school, go to college, and then the trend we're seeing now is that up to 70% of them end up walking away from the faith when they get to college. And I was already kind of into apologetics, but then hearing that, it was like, okay, this is a 911, and I can help do something about this.
I love that, man. It gets me really excited. Yeah, I hear it seems like that statistic climbs every year. I'm curious. I don't know if anyone's done a study, because I think, you know, having a daughter now that's about to leave for college, and it makes me obviously think about more of those things. But I'm just curious because I think maybe after college, it's almost like you as a student or as a young adult, like you can't live your parents' faith anymore. Especially if, like, I obviously didn't have that issue. I didn't grow up in a Christian home, but my kids have. And, you know, that's one thing that I've just realized. It makes me wonder is, like, how many kids go off to school or Bible college or something like that, and they've lived their parents' faith out for the last 18 to 20 years, and they have to find it themselves. And it's alarming, but at the same time, I think it's a little exciting, because I believe God's not intimidated by, you know, the prodigal son that goes off and just is stupid for a season.
Right.
But what I appreciate about people like you, though, is you come in and you bring clarity to the stupidity, because the enemy comes along and lies to us, and especially to young adults, and makes them obviously question their faith through science and things like that. And we need people like you to come in and bring truth into the lies.
Yeah. And that's definitely true. And if I tell you my story, which we'll probably get into, no one would say, oh, by the time you're this age, you'll be a pastor, you'll be doing this. I should have been dead. I should have been probably locked up. I should have been a lot of things except this. And so once, God spared me, or he covered me, he showed enough mercy for me to get to this point. Yeah. And now, because of that, I make it my aim. I have to give him back my all, not because it's some kind of works-based theology. It's just because I literally owe him my life, not just from a salvific point of view, but from an actual life or death point of view, from the lifestyle I used to live. So for me, it's just about being proactive. And I thank God that he got me back, but it doesn't always happen like that. And so if there's anything I can do in the meantime to help parents or ministries, you know, before they have the prodigal son moment, then I want to do that too.
I think that's a segue to go into my next question, is why don't you dive into a little bit of your testimony, but talk about why you've gotten into apologetics and speaking.
Okay. So, can't give it all, it's just not enough time, but I'll start here. When I was young, probably about six, my dad, he had a disease called sickle cell, and it affects a lot of African Americans, and he was good, and then it kicked in around that time in his life and then in my life. And for the next five or so years, he ended up getting a kidney transplant and then dialysis. He was in and out of the hospital. I remember several times being ready to go on a family vacation and couldn't. He had to go to the hospital, and he carried it well. But at age, when I was 11, he passed away.
Wow.
And that was, I don't know. There's just nothing to really tell a kid or tell anyone at that age to do with it. I'm the oldest. I have a younger brother, so you're kind of forced to be the man of the house at 11, which doesn't make sense, and it's not really possible. And my mom carried a lot, so I'm not saying she put all this on me, but even as I bring her up, a couple of months ago, she passed away.
I'm sorry.
So she had, for the last 10-ish years, been dealing with an eye issue where it left her almost completely blind.
Wow.
And I think just the amount of medication she was on, and her body just eventually couldn't take it anymore. So there's more in between. So after my dad passed away, actually, let me say this, but both of my parents if there's something that I've learned, not just from the lessons that they taught me, the way they carried their issues would make all of us, it made me ashamed to ever complain about anything.
Wow.
If you only talked to my mom on the phone, and if you never saw her face to face where you could see, you would never know she had an issue. I would call her and be talking about something, and she would be encouraging me while she can't see. She still went to work, and she was a lawyer. She still got work done. I don't understand the amount of faith that she had, to the very end. And so I'm strong physically, but I'll never be as strong as her. And that teaches me something every day, just keeps me humble. And at the end of the day, I know both of them are in a better place. They definitely instilled that faith in me, and it was my fault. I drifted away in my 10, 20 years, through no fault of their own, cause they definitely instilled the right things. But, after my dad passed, my mom got remarried a few years later. So my stepdad came on the scene. He wasn't half the man my dad was, which we found out later. He wasn't physically abusive, but like emotionally, psychologically, I would say. So that drove me into some other issues. I got to college, started drinking, doing drugs. That led to some other things. That led to some run-ins with police. Got kicked out of school. I fought my way back into school. I'm giving a lot of snippets because I don't have time to go into details about these things. But I had a lot of anger issues. Anger issues to the point that it used to make me, when I walked around campus, it used to make me angry to see somebody smile.
No, oh, wow.
Like, that's how deep the hurt was. And I didn't know how to cope with it. So I, as we often do, cope in my own way, and not good ways. And so fast forwarding again, I'm out of school. I finally actually feel God pulling me back. I get back into church because during this whole time I had drifted. I wasn't going to church. And part of the reason was I felt too dirty to go to church. But I didn't have anybody there to tell me that's the one place you need to go. So it just drove me deeper and deeper into sin. That's the best way to say it. So my girlfriend at the time, and this is where everything ties in, she was an atheist, comes from a family, or at least on one side, a lot of them who are atheists. I would say there's two types of atheists. There's the type that are just lazy, and it's just easier not to believe in God, so why bother?
Right.
And then there's the other type that they've studied, they got PhDs, and they've figured, quote unquote, this God thing out, and they've reasoned that there is no God. That's where she comes from, a very intellectual side. And that is much more daunting because you can't just come as a Christian. You can't just come at them any kind of way. You have to have some evidence.
Right.
So this is what apologetics is. Now, I didn't even know what that word meant. And one day this is where I'm back into the relationship with God. My mom had always sent me books. I never read them.
So, that's awesome.
One day I'm going through this case of books and I'm like, well, let me try reading a book and see if this will help me. And the first book I picked up was called The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel.
Great book.
Great book. And obviously, you know, his story, he tried to prove his atheism true, ended up proving Christianity true. And when I read the book, it never even dawned on me that there would be evidence of that nature. And it opened up just a new world for me. And so the knowing of the type of atheist that my wife was before she was my wife, which we can talk about how she got saved too, because that was a miracle. It let me know that this is necessary. So that kind of started the journey, but it kind of kicked into high gear the last 3 or 4 years for me, where I started going to trainings and getting trained by some of the best in the world.
Let me back up real quick. I'm just curious. So you guys started dating. So you just kind of felt like, did you like her or something? So you were, obviously you liked her, you got married to her, but at that point, were you thinking, man, I need to prove this, or I really need to step up my game to be able to have a conversation with her? So that was kind of like the shove to start diving into this book.
Not in a way, but actually what happened was when I was so when we met, when she met me, I was an alcoholic drug dealer with anger issues. So
great combination, by the way.
I was also quote unquote a Christian, and I wasn't living anything like a Christian. So for her, I think it was like, okay, he says he's a Christian, but he's not living like it, so I can deal with it. So what happened was when I when I graduated and when I started to get back in church and when I knew God was pulling me back to him, then it became to be an issue because she was still in school. She came out to Chicago. And then I started having this struggle internally, like, okay, I know we can't, two can't be unequally yoked. This is not going to, I sensed that we're hitting a wall that for her wasn't a problem, but for me it was.
Yeah.
And so I started praying. I started seeking counsel, talking to my pastor, talking to my friends. And this is where the kind of miracle of her salvation comes in. I went to a church service one day. It's one of those services where you feel like you're the only one in the room, right?
Oh yeah. And it's everything's that's being talked about is like directed at you.
Right. Like yeah. I can still see where I was sitting in the sanctuary and the pastor, my pastor, who is still my pastor today, he was talking about how, when he was trying to decide on who his wife was or trying to get into that frame of mind of looking for a wife, he talks about these five women, not all at the same time, but one by one, he's like, God, is this the one? God, is this the one? And all the times it was no, until he found his one and only wife, who he just had a, I think, 25-year anniversary with. So I had always been trying to convince my now wife, Casey, of what I believed to be true, but I didn't have the evidence. I knew I was right, but I couldn't articulate it. And to be honest, she used to whip my butt when we had debates or when we had discussions because I was the kind of nominal Christian that just didn't really know what I should know. So I went to her and I, cause in my mind I was like, okay, the one thing I haven't done is give God a chance. That's how we tend to do it. We're like, I'm going to do everything I can. And then when that doesn't work, I'll let God try. Yeah. Which obviously is backwards. So I went to her and I kind of flippantly said, you know, I would like you to come to church with me next Sunday. Now let me back up a couple months, but a couple months before that, I essentially ended the relationship after a lot of struggle. And I told her as an atheist, I said, hey, I love you, but I have to let you go. I love you, but I love God more.
Yeah.
And the only thing in my mind at that moment was I just want to be obedient. I wasn't trying to think of trying to trick God into like, all I wanted to do was just be obedient and do what I felt God leading me to do. So I said that. Then a few months later, I'm like, hey, you know, come to church. So the next Sunday she comes to church. She said, yes.
So y'all stayed and still talked and stayed friends.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so then the next week we go to church. On the title of the bulletin, the title for the sermon for that day was, I love you so much, I'm willing to let you go.
Oh, that's fun.
So and anybody who's listening, we had a testimony video of this made. It's on my YouTube channel. So the longer version is there. But that happened. She looked at me. I looked at her. She's like, did you know? I'm like, I didn't know. I think I was more shocked than she was. Yeah. I've heard miracles, seen miracles, or heard of miracles. But this was like, there's no way to deny the presence of God in that situation. So she kept coming. And a few weeks later, she made that walk that we've all made. And she went to the front and got saved.
Wow.
And I'm sitting in the seat crying and, because that was never even, I don't even think I trusted God enough for that to happen, to be yeah. honest with you. And when that happened, it actually even had another effect of making me clean up my life even more. Because I'm like, man, now she's actually saved. So I gotta really be right. So that's how all those kind of things, life events, apologetics, all kind of line up. Because I see the need for evidence. I know the testimony of what God can do. And what he will do just to save one.
Yeah, I love the fact that you talked about breaking up with your girlfriend. And this is what I'm just thinking. I'm trying to articulate my mind right now what I'm thinking. But it made me think about when Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac, right? Mm. And what I think about that is he just wanted to be obedient. And he wanted to lay it down. And somebody asked me, I think I'm going about 2 years into this show, and somebody had asked me, they said, you know, what is the one thing that seems consistent that you've learned? And the one thing, without a shadow of a doubt, that I've learned after doing over 100 shows is every single person has this defining moment of obedience where they're just like, I just wanted to obey. Yeah. And I'm telling you, like, I've stories that would just, Dr. Clyde Rivers was the first one that always came to my mind. He was like the first 15 shows, and he was in Africa and literally just wanted to be obedient and heard the Lord speak. He gives a prophetic word to a guy in a church who then becomes the president of that nation.
Wow.
And he was scared though, because he said, there it's different. He said, they will kill you for giving a false word. He's like, it's not something you just flippantly, he said, there's a responsibility there. And he knew that. And he gives this word. Well, to this day, he's now the ambassador to one of those nations over there.
Wow.
And, but it changed his whole life out of obedience. But I've heard that over and over. Another one just real quick comes to my mind. You know, the book, The Shack by Paul Young. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is funny. He wrote that book out of being obedient to his wife. And I mean, but I know it's different. People will say, well, that's not to the Lord, but he was still, he loved the Lord, but his wife had asked him to write the book as a testimony to his kids.
Wow.
And that blew up. I mean, it's just things like that. I think if people would understand, like so many times God asks us to lay things down in our mind, we think it's going to be terrible. But all he's asking is, says, if you can lay this little thing down in return, I can give you this big thing, but I need you to lay it down.
Man, that's so good. And I was actually teaching, one of the things I do in my role is I teach teachers, I train teachers, and I was doing our last quarterly education training for the year a few nights ago. And I told them, obedience usually makes sacrifice unnecessary. You know, like we're talking, I'll make a sacrifice for God, but a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times the only reason we have to make a sacrifice is because it got so bad because we weren't obedient in the first place. And so if we would have just been obedient up front, then we wouldn't have to have this cleanup process on the back end where now you got to make a sacrifice and he's got to clean it up for you. And you're right. That the other part of my testimony I didn't even go into, which is for my next book, is semi-autobiographical, where I kind of learned my purpose. I went through an 18-month, after my wife, now wife, got saved, I went through an 18-month financial hell. I lost everything. This was right before the crash. I was a real estate investor at the time, too, and I was also working in the mortgage industry. I lost 7 properties, foreclosure, bankruptcy, like everything.
Well, hey.
And the last thing I was holding on to.
No, I was going to say, why don't you back up into that? Because I love, I keep saying I love, and my wife's getting on to me. I need to change my words, baby. So I know she's going to edit this podcast and she's going to say something. So that being said, why don't you dive into that? Because I really enjoy people's stories. There's nothing better than testimony. And coming at like what I call, it couldn't be worse than this moment where you go through what you called hell. And then you get to the other side and you're like, God, you are so faithful and so good. But yes, it was miserable, but it built something and it's usually a solid foundation.
Yeah. Okay. So it was about 18 months. And like I said, I was young. I was in the mortgage industry, so I knew how to work things. And you know how it was.
Get money on a handshake, baby. That's what I do. I invest in real estate. We buy and flip houses and do stuff.
Right.
But I remember those days. You could walk into a bank and get money on a handshake.
I mean, no doc, stated like 100%. It was crazy just giving money away.
I could tell you, so I made half a million a year and made like 10,000. It'd be like, oh, really? Half a million? Here, I can give you all the money you need for all the houses you want.
Oh, I was taking advantage, as a lot of people were, but I wasn't, nothing illegal, just doing more than what I could really handle, and got caught. When stuff started to go downhill. But actually my recession hit before the actual recession. So, because I know there was a spiritual component to it. I know that now at least. And so I was going through this. One thing that's always been on my mind, that even in college, even when I was doing dirt, I always had this idea of writing a book, and I didn't even know what it was supposed to be or why, and actually the book that I have released is not even the book that I've always felt to release. That's the one that I'm working on now. So anyway, I'm going through this situation. It's like every day is worse than the one before. And every day I'll kind of wake up like, okay, I know you love me, God. I know it's not going to get worse than this. And then it would get worse than this. But here's the thing. Those 18 months, that's when I learned how to worship.
But when you say it couldn't get worse, like give us some details though. I'm prying because I want to know.
So, and with all those properties, there's millions of dollars of mortgage loans out. that I'm right. trying to pay, can't pay.
Because you've lost renters or...
I've lost renters. I can't get renters in there. Or some I was going to do a quick flip, but then I got stuck with it for longer than I expected to. Yeah. Then there's the insurance. Then that goes forward. Then the creditors start calling. Then you're dodging phone calls. Then then you're trying to ask for help, but you feel bad about that because then, you know, my mom loves me. She would help me. She helped me once, but I didn't want to ask her anymore. And then there's like that male pride. I don't want to ask for help. At the time also, so I knew God, but I never really learned how to get in the word and study. I never really learned how to worship him. And so there was days where I literally had to worship and pray for a couple hours just to have enough presence to leave the house and not run my car into a wall because I was so depressed.
Yeah.
You know, days borderline suicidal, just, I can't take it anymore. And then and on top of that, she just got saved and I can't explain, like, man, you just joined Christianity. Look how great it is.
Welcome to the big show, baby.
You know, and I had to, once again, just be obedient. And what I always was careful of is my words. I never said I was broke, even though I was. I would, so you have to be very creative when you talk to people and explain why you can't buy things when you don't have money, when you need money to borrow money to get a haircut or food or whatever. But I was very, very careful with my words. And I was also very careful to tell her, I know God's going to get us out of this. I don't know how, I don't know when, but this is something I've learned that I tell people, that the unknown is not the same as uncertainty. You may not know how he's going to get you there, but you know that he will.
Yeah. Amen.
So as the time went on, I started losing everything. The one thing I was holding on to was the house where I lived, because obviously I lived there. And one night I had just actually got done teaching youth ministry, came home. I got served eviction papers. And I remember, and then she was sitting on the couch, she's crying. And I started smiling. And something clicked. And I realized the devil really thinks I'm going to give up. And I had more peace in the moment where I lost everything than when I had all the stuff. Yeah. And the reason was, I realized the only way the devil wins is if I stop doing what God called me to do. If I have to live in a box, I that is what it is. But I'm not going to turn my back on God. And I just had this kind of like moment of fortitude where I just refused to let this be the end. So I remember also during this time, like, God, you told me to write a book, and I would get mad at God some days. I wasn't always, you know, with this great heavenly mindset. I remember telling God, if you get me out of this, I'll write the book. And I remember just as clear as day, the Holy Spirit said, this is the book. So I took almost like the last $5 I had. I went to the store, bought a journal. And so now I journaled every day. And it was only like recently, like 2 years ago, that I brought that journal back out for the very first time. And I actually got to read what my thoughts were at the time in my life. And so now the book that I'm working on, it's pretty much, it's written, it's edited. My wife's my editor for my blog and for everything else. And so I just needed the publisher right now, that every chapter starts with a journal entry. And then it goes into different aspects of how you uncover, discover, and walk in your purpose and the things that God is going to show you along the way. But I ask people, what were you birthed to birth? I believe everybody's been created on purpose with a purpose. And so once we get to that realization, life doesn't necessarily become easier, but it just makes more sense.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. You just said, what are you birthed? Why were you birthed to birth, or what are you birthed to birth?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you dive into purpose? Because, obviously that's what our show's about. That's what you talk about as well as in your show, but why don't you dive into that, finding that realization and some of the questions, whether we could have fun, you could use me as a guinea pig, or you can just start asking talk about the questions you ask. I'm just curious because I think it'd be really good for listeners to get into that.
No, absolutely. And I think the best and most necessary thing you can do, the best and most necessary homework assignment you can ever do, is doing research on yourself. Do homework on yourself. Figure out, write stuff down. Just take time, meditate, think, who am I? And that's a great starting point. It's not going to give you all the answers, but I'll just give you a few of the questions that I give people or help people to ask. Number one, what frustrates you in life? Usually whatever frustrates you in life is what you were born to solve. And when I say frustrates you, I don't mean getting cut off by a driver on the road or, you know, your little sister or whatever.
Road rage doesn't count?
The what?
Road rage doesn't count?
No. That's a whole other issue.
Yes.
So when I say this, I mean, what problem do you see and wonder why no one else has addressed it yet? So in fact, you don't just see the problem. You're watching the news and you're like, but if they just did this, that would solve the problem. When you have those type of moments where you see something so clearly and no one's doing anything about it, that's usually a great sign that that's in line with your purpose. One of the things that frustrates me in life is improper biblical teaching. When people are mangling the word and mistreating and misconstruing scripture, like, it irks me. When I hear certain things that prominent atheists or other worldviews say on TV or radio or wherever, it makes me cringe. And some people can just kind of go with it or just ignore it, but I can't. And so usually people are most often known for one of two things, either the problems they solve or the problems they create. And we don't want to be problem creators. Even you, this podcast solves a problem. You're giving the world access to a lot of different points of view, but they're all in line with aspects of purpose and obedience, like you said. So this is solving a problem. That's also why it's doing well, because it fills a gap that needs to be filled. Be the solution to someone's problem and you will watch your life go from average to exceptional. That's what I would tell people. There's a video actually, I think, on my website called No Such Thing as Average. Second question, whose pain do you feel? You know, if I'm watching the news and I see the little old lady getting taken advantage of by her mechanic, it makes me upset. It makes me sad, but I don't run out and start a business to fix that.
Right.
That's not my thing. If I can help her, I'll help her, but it's not like, oh man, how could this? But when I see young boys, especially struggling in life, struggling to find purpose, struggling to be leaders, that gets me every time. I will run to that. I will run to them. I've discipled so many young men. They stay here at the house and, you know, I've spent money. I've spent time. I invest in them because that's where my heart goes first. It's not to say I won't teach and help other people. It's just, but I feel their pain probably because I used to be one.
Right.
Third question. And this one's kind of a little nuanced and it may not be applicable for everybody, but what did you get in trouble for as a child? And it's an interesting question because I think we all got in trouble for a lot of the same things, but there might be things that you specifically, I was talking to a guy the other day. He said, even when he was very young, he used to love cars. He used to love to take apart engines and rebuild them. And he was at a young age and his dad would pull up and he would say to his dad, like, hey, you got new tires at 6 or 7 years old. Like, what kid notices that? Yeah. And that's not getting in trouble, but it's just something that you're noticing. Now, a better example would be, I'm going to date myself when I say this. If you have a kid and you come home and they're taking apart your VCR, I know the millennials don't even know what that is, but that's how we used to watch movies or TV or whatever. And you see the kid and they took it apart and you spent your hard earned money to buy this thing and you're mad and you tell the kid, don't ever do that again. And you punish them, which makes sense. But because your purpose is in you at birth, it's going to manifest early and it's going to manifest usually in ways that are not going to be in line with keeping it within the rules of society or the rules of the house. It has to be reined in. It has to be honed. That takes life. And so, so often as parents, if we're not careful, we can kill that purpose so early because we see something we don't like, or we see something that's not like us, but it's something that God put in them. It's just manifesting in the wrong way at the wrong time. And so if we're cautious and say, oh, that's really amazing that you were able to take that apart and put that together. Please don't do that again. But you're noticing maybe he's going to be an engineer, or he or she. Maybe there's some kind of technical quality that they're going to have or need later in life. So that's an example. And then the fourth question, I'll stop with this one. Who are you jealous of? I just wrote a blog post about this. I don't think it's come out yet, but jealousy is often one side of a two-sided coin. That other person you're jealous of, usually just had the guts or the courage to do what you've only wished you could do. And the reason that jealousy is also a great clue is, think about it like this. You're not usually jealous of everyone in the world. You're usually jealous of a certain type of person doing a certain type of thing. That's a great clue, because I've never been jealous of a hockey player.
Yeah.
I have no desire to play hockey. I don't even really have a desire to go watch hockey, but and I've been to a couple match games, and it's been pretty cool, but I have been jealous of a speaker, and not in the point of like sinful, just in the point of, man, I really want to be doing that. I really want that. I really want that to do that for people and to help people make sense of their life. And that led me not to stay jealous, but it led me to seek them out sometimes directly and say, tell me, help me do that. Help me get to where you are. Help me learn how to do what you're doing so I can help people in that same way. So it can either drive you into the jealousy, I hate them, I want to see them die, or it can drive you into, man, this is awakening a passion in me that I didn't even know was there, but I really want to explore that and see that manifest.
I like that what you said at the end, right now, talking about jealousy and reaching out to people. What has been your experience on that? Is like, you've seen something in someone, you're like, man, I want to be that. Like, that's what I want to do. And instead of being angry about it, reaching out and saying, man, can you help me? Have you had some really cool experiences on that?
Absolutely. I went, so as far as the apologetics is concerned, and I don't think, though some of us probably a little jealousy, but I've reached out, if anybody's familiar, obviously, with Ravi Zacharias, mm-hmm. You know, Frank Turek, Jim Warner Wallace. And so I went and sought training. Now, Robbie's hard to track down because he's on the road, you know, every day. but I finally got the chance to meet him this year. And it wasn't, and so in that sense, it wasn't necessarily it was just the level of admiration I have for him. It's like, I gotta meet him. I gotta just have even a brief conversation, you know, because there's something there that I need in order to do what God's called me to do. Other ones I've reached out to directly, and I went and submitted to being trained by them. What's another one? I'm a student kind of Dr. Miles Monroe who passed away.
I love that guy, man. His stuff is just phenomenal, dude. Phenomenal. I mean, and he was way ahead of his time.
Way. And I think people are still catching up. I was talking with a pastor yesterday who is kind of, he was friends with, and they both taught together. One of the people that Dr. Monroe directly mentored is now my mentor. And I did directly seek him out. When I went to a conference that he wasn't teaching at, but there's another guy there teaching. When this guy got done teaching, I was sitting in the front row. I had stopped taking notes because when I was watching him, I was like, I don't even understand what I'm looking at right now. Cause the way he was flowing and the amount of information, I've never seen that before. It's a pastor from Zimbabwe. I literally, when he got done, he went off the stage. His people were coming and taking him wherever to the other room. I chased him down and I was like, look, I know you don't know me, but I need you to pray for me right now just to have some kind of impartation. I knew I couldn't miss that moment. And so there's those types of moments, those types of instances. I think, like you said, Dr. Monroe, I've never heard somebody explain and teach the kingdom better than that, better than him. I actually was at his church the year he died, but I was there. He was traveling the day I was there. But he's mentored me from a distance and still from the grave with YouTube and everything else and books. And he's also the one who kind of awoke the idea of purpose because he talked about that a lot. And so once I started to listen, I was like, it makes sense. Now for me, where I think I'm kind of unique is there's a lot of times where people are the apologists and that's their lane, and that's fine. And there's nothing, because we need that. And there's some people who are Dr. Monroe, like the kingdom talkers or teachers. Some do leadership, some do these things. God's given me a way of connecting all those dots together. Yeah. So for me, my main goal in life, I want to get you to understand that God's given you a purpose and you need to walk in it. That's very difficult if you don't believe there's a God, right? So for me, apologetics is a means to an end. First, prove the case, especially with young people. Let me prove there's a God. So then I can get you to have a conversation with him. Because once again, I never tell someone their purpose. Only God can do that. So if you're never going to talk to him, it's going to be very difficult for you to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
So apologetics leads to finding your purpose. And that leads you to becoming a leader. And so if you look at my logo, it's always purpose, leadership, apologetics. Because those three, for me, they're intertwined.
Yeah, I love the fact that you talk about having one end to the other. Like for me, prophetic ministry is kind of like, you know, I can be somewhere and God just gives me a word for somebody. And honestly, sometimes I'm wrong. I mean, that just happens. But, you know, it's a door into their life. Like the Lord will just show me something about somebody's life. And I'm just like, hey, you know, does this ring true to you or something like that? And people look at you like, how do you know that? Or who, or it's more like, who are you? And are you a stalker? And, but you're able to share, you know, God's heart for, his heart towards them. And it just opens a door and an opportunity to share God's love in their life. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he does care about me, or, oh, he does exist, or something like that. It gets them thinking about, oh, maybe God really does love me. Maybe he really does exist. And it causes them to explore that. And that's what really gets me excited about that. Like what you're doing, because it gets people thinking.
Yep. Yeah. I think the other thing within all of this is connecting the dots. So once again, because your purpose is in you. So he tells, I think it's Jeremiah 1:5, you know, before you were formed in your mother's womb, I had a purpose for you. The scripture, Isaiah 46:10, where he says, declaring the end from the beginning, ancient to ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure. One scripture I pray every day from Joshua 1:8 says, as you meditate on this book of the law day and night, then you shall be prosperous and successful. So there's something that even when Paul talks in Galatians about, you know, he put this in me when I was in my mother's womb. But we think about all that time he spent as Saul before he became Paul, that didn't negate the fact that God put that Paul in him before he became that. So if we're able to go back, and I would tell people, if you can retrace your life and kind of connect the dots, because God's been revealing your purpose throughout your life, you just probably weren't paying attention. I think of a situation with me, I think 9th grade, my English teacher came and said, hey, Alex, I think you should join the debate team. I think you really like it. You speak well, this and that. I had never heard of a debate team. I didn't know what that was. And I joined it. I loved it. I would go to competitions. But the reason I bring that up is because it teaches you, because you have to argue in the affirmative and the negative, and it teaches you how to formulate arguments and, you know, win them. As an apologist, that is a very necessary skill. Yeah. And I didn't connect the dot at 9th grade because I didn't even know what an apologist was. But God did. And so he was showing certain aspects of what I would need and even honing those gifts and those talents at that age. So I think if I could go back, I would try to connect more dots earlier, because I think it would save some heartache and some headache. And I think if we can all kind of, once again, do that homework on yourself and figure out, you know, what has been already revealed to you.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to just something I wrote down that I think most people don't realize is that God saw Paul as Paul before he ever became Paul. And so many times people think, you know, God sees us as gum on the bottom of a shoe or whatever it is, like, because we put ourselves there. But God always sees the greatness of who we truly are. He's just trying to get us there because that's how, because he designed us. He knows how he created us. He's just trying to get us to become who we've always been.
Wow. And that's good. One other kind of way of helping people find their purpose. And as you even said it and made me think about it, I have these three D's. So design, desire, and distinction. Let me see how I can say this. I'll just say design does matter. I know there's some debates and some talks and some differences of opinion currently in society. I'll just say God does not make mistakes. However he designs anything is how he meant to. And we'll just leave that there. Desire. We all have a desire to do certain things. And I'm not just talking about making money and stuff like that, but there's certain desires that you have that I don't have. Certain things that fulfill you just in a sense of joy that would make me feel depressed. Right. And yeah, vice versa. So if somebody think about this, how are you designed? And I don't just mean physically designed, but how do you think? What is your natural way of processing information, processing the world? That's part of your design. So examine that. Then desire. What are your desires? What are your passions? What are your gifts, your talents, your abilities? What are the things that bring you a sense of fulfillment? And then the third one is distinction. There's a friend and apologist of mine, Jim Warner Wallace, who wrote Cold Case Christianity and some other books. He talks about your unicorn status. And so within any realm or segment of society, there may be other people who technically do what you do, but they don't do it like you do it. So there's other podcasters. They don't do it the way you do it. Their focus is not your focus. And so there's a distinction that each of us have. And once we find that, that's when we find our, you know, unique status, our extraordinary status. There's no such thing as typical. Even the fact that we all have our own fingerprint and there's 7 billion people on the planet. And even if you count everybody else before that, none of us have ever had the same fingerprint. There's no such thing as typical. And that already excludes you from the realm of ordinary. So we have this, some people have a mindset of I'm nobody. I'm just like everybody else. No, there's another quote. I can't remember where I read it, that it was talking about the most crowded place is average. It's actually easier to be above average because there's less competition. But people, I think either through fear or through lack of knowledge or whatever it is, they're like, you know, I don't deserve to be there. I shouldn't even try that. I shouldn't try to do this. No one else is doing this. That's the very reason you should do it. That's the very reason you should do it. Instead of getting in the mix with everybody and either becoming like them or never maximizing the potential that's in you.
Yeah, I like that you said that. It just made me think of what makes you stand out. I'm taking notes as you're talking, man, because it's good. Plus, it gets my brain thinking. So, okay, I want to real quick as we kind of wrap up the show. I'm really happy that we've dove into a lot of different things, kind of about you. But I'm just curious for you specifically, what do you feel like your biggest strength is in what you do?
So as you probably know, or have even said, persistence, and sometimes it even frustrates me. I can't turn it off. I'm just, so even as you talked about how many times I followed up and trying not to be annoying, but trying to be consistent.
Yeah.
I'm just persistent. I go for what I feel like God's telling me to go for, and I just don't stop until I get it. It's just in me. So, that's what I would say is one of my biggest strengths is persistence, persistence and preparation. But I think they go hand in hand.
I agree. What do you feel like your biggest weakness is? And do you feel like it's possibly an overextension of your strength?
Yes. One big weakness is impatience, which probably is an overextension of being persistent, because you want to make it happen. You want to get it going, whatever it is. And then you get impatient when it's not happening quick enough, or in your mind, not quick enough, but it's always quick enough in God's timing. So impatience is kind of the other side of that. And that's something I definitely struggle with, is just, I hate waiting.
Yeah.
I hate waiting.
Yeah. I feel your pain on that. I got, when I was young, I'll never forget this. It was a pastor friend of mine, him and I, we had started a distribution company. We did energy drinks and water to convenience stores. And I was probably 23, 25 years old, somewhere in there. And we're driving around and we're delivering to stores. And the guy that was in charge of letting us into like the coolers or the space, but people don't realize is that's like real, it's real estate. It's, I mean, they literally call it real estate. It's shelf real estate. You pay to play. And we had gotten an opportunity to get a bunch of shelf space in this chain of stores. And I couldn't get a hold of them. And man, I blew this guy's phone up. Like I was calling and calling and calling. And and my buddy was like, dude, you're crazy. And I was like thinking in my mind, I'm like, dude, I have something to do. I have somewhere to be. Like, we need to get this done. And, yeah. And honestly, it was a lack of maturity. There's no way I would do that now. I mean, I respect people's time on a whole nother level than I do now. And finally, I'm not kidding you. I bet you I called him 15 times in a row. Wow. And the guy finally answers. He's like, what? And I'm like, man, I'm sorry, but we're on our way. And you said this and we need to do that. And he's just like, you know, he was really frustrated. Now, I got exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
But I got it out of frustration. And honestly, I could have still gotten what I've wanted had I just been more respectful of the guy's time.
Yeah.
But it just makes me think about that, being impatient sometimes. There's a maturity that comes with it over time, because I was trying to kick down a door that was honestly already open. I just needed to slowly open it and not try to put my foot through it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I definitely know what you're saying. There's times where I'm like, oh, should I send this email? Has it been too many emails? Should I call? Has it been too many calls? You know, because my heart is, I want to be an asset. I want to be a resource, especially as I'm talking with churches and pastors to try to come and host one of my apologetics workshops. But I don't want to be a pest. I know people are busy, especially pastors. And, you know, so it's a fine line that I'm always kind of in my head struggling with, but I definitely agree with you.
Yeah. So it's definitely one of those things you got to learn. So, okay. So we got to wrap this show up. It's been a great talk, but I never skipped this question. So I do want to hit you on this. Mm-hmm. My question is, Alex, if you could go back to a younger you, what age would you pick and what advice would you give yourself? Now, you can't change anything that you're going to do. So, you know, you got to be a drug dealer and you got to get in trouble and all those bad things that we all did. Right.
Yeah.
But you can't change that, but you're going to give yourself that, you know, apologetic motivational talk at a young age. What are you going to tell yourself? What age?
I would probably go somewhere around 16, somewhere in there. And the best way I can just say this advice is just pay attention. Because I believe and know now, it's through that maturity that God's working. He's working things out. He's revealing some things to you and some things about you. And so often we aren't paying attention because we're just trying to make it to the next day or the next phase in life. And I get it. You're in high school. You're like, okay, college, where am I going to go to college? And college is done. Like, what do I do now? Grad school, get a job. Like, so you're always just thinking about the next thing. But if we pay attention along the way, sometimes the plan that we have is not his plan for us.
Yes.
And there's some things that we can avoid in life that we may not have to be burdened by or experience or feel the brunt of if we would just slow down, pay attention, and see what has already been shown to me. What has God already done? What is he already showing to me? And what is that telling me that I should possibly do next? We're in go mode so often that we often don't take time to just reflect and pay attention. Just, I mean, take notes on the events that have happened, the things that you did plan and the things you didn't. Like, I didn't plan for my dad to pass or my mom or to lose properties or any of those things. And you know, not so much with the passing of my parents, but definitely in the financial struggle and some other things, I can definitely see how he has already and how he planned to work those things out. The thing with the thing with God that gets me is it's about perspective. So, for example, we're here doing this interview. I'm thinking, okay, this is great to talk with you. This is a good conversation. But God's thinking 10 years down the line, some person in China will be impacted by this somehow. Like, he's connected some dots that we don't even know exist. Yeah. And so sometimes it's just a matter of getting out of your own way, getting out of God's way, essentially, to let him connect all the dots. Because the way he connects them is going to not bless, like, where I'm thinking, okay, if I do this, it blesses one person over here. God's thinking, if you do this, it's going to bless 1,000 people in 17 countries. Like, the math and the scope and the scale of the way God thinks and operates is just so vastly different from ours that rather than try to figure out, just pay attention to what he's doing and let him do it.
Yeah, it's funny when you said that, I just wrote down something. I was just writing, obedience in my mind is just getting out of God's way and allowing him to step into what we've always were intended to do.
Wow, that's absolutely true. Real quick, so I was in the insurance and financial services industry for 9 years. I left last year because they made me. Yeah. That's my way of saying that. But I always, as much as I tell people to walk in their purpose, I knew I wasn't fully walking in mine. And sometimes God has to push us to get us to do that. And so now this is all I do as far as teaching evidence for the faith and speaking and writing, because he was like, you gotta launch, and you're not launching quick enough on your own. So I'm going to force you to launch. And so sometimes God has a way of getting our attention. I was at the top of the game until the last couple of years, but I was going on all American trips, top 100 reps in the company, doing great, but I wasn't fulfilled in that line of work. And there was nothing wrong with the work or the company. It was just, I knew there was something more that I was supposed to do. It's not for everybody, but I just know what God told me to do. And now I'm fully able to do it fully and do it completely.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, because it made me think there was a, we go back and forth, and I know some people, it annoys them. I've actually had emails like, I just wanted to hear about the person you're interviewing. I don't want to hear about you, but I can't help it. This is a conversation, man. And it just brain thinking. So I was working for a guy, I had taken a break. I've always been self-employed, had multiple businesses, but you're talking about the financial crash. We had lost the same deal in real estate, doing all that. We had lost a company overnight and lost $1 million company literally in 24 hours. It was devastating. Wow. And I went to work for like 1/4 of the pay that I was making for a guy for a while, but it got my feet in the door into what I was always wanting to do, which was interesting. So it got my foot in the door, and I got to learn some things about business that I didn't know. But I was slowly trying to make my exit out, but I was too scared to do it. But I knew I was supposed to.
Yeah.
And I literally got fired over something that, like, I got blamed for. It wasn't my fault. The owner thought I did it. I tried to explain to him, like, hey, this is not what happened. And it just, none of it worked out that way. And I was like, I can't change his mind. He thinks I did it. That's okay. But it allowed me to look like, at the time it seemed devastating, but it was funny though, because it was like God shoving me out the door. It wasn't like, hey, it's time to leave. It's like, as a father, I'm kicking you out the door and you're going to learn this because you haven't been obedient. I've been telling you to leave and you haven't been obedient. So I'm going to kick you out now.
Yep. Absolutely. Dr. Monroe said, your future is not ahead of you, is trapped within you. And he said this other quote, the wealthiest place in the world is not the gold mines of South America or the oil fields of Iraq or Iran. They're not the diamond mines of South Africa or the banks of the world. The wealthiest place on the planet is just down the road. It's the cemetery. They're library companies that were never started, inventions that were never made, best-selling books that were never written, and masterpieces that were never painted. In the cemetery is buried the greatest treasure of untapped potential. Mm. And that quote that breaks my heart, and that's what I'm trying to prevent. That's like my head space is filled with, don't die with it in you. Don't die because you're old. Die because you're empty. Die because you've given everything out. I'd rather fail at something I love than succeed at something I hate. Like, that's just where I am right now in my thinking, in my life. And I would encourage everyone to get to that point that you gotta go where you feel led to go. And I don't say that in the kind of guru type of way of the day, but I say it as far as that's how God operates. That's how God thinks. Mark Twain said the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. So make today that second most important day.
Mm. Amen, dude. That was good. I love that. Okay. So you've given an awesome testimony of you, what you're doing, who you are. You gave yourself advice. As we wrap up the show, Alex, what piece of parting advice would you give our audience?
That's kind of it. Do the homework on yourself. Begin to make the plan, begin to get the answers to those questions that I gave out, and begin to figure out what it is that is trapped inside of you that needs to come out. Ask yourself, what makes me unique? Just ask these questions and be honest with the answers. There's two people you should never lie to, God and yourself. But people do it all the time, right? And you're telling yourself one thing. There's a statistic that scares me. It's another 70% statistic, but they said that if you poll U.S. Americans, 70% of them say that they hate their job. I refuse to believe that you were born to hate what you do every day. I just don't believe that's how it was ever meant to be.
Absolutely.
So if that's your case, I'm not telling everybody march in your office and quit today. But what I am telling you is take 10 minutes, a half an hour, an hour a day, and begin to be intentional and purposeful about figuring out what it is you are supposed to do and what it is that does drive you. And if that's not contained within your job currently, figure out how to either make it your job or find time in your life to do that also. Because you don't want to live, Dr. Moreau, I know I'm giving all his quotes away, but he said most people die at 25 and are buried at age 65. Because the thing inside you has been killed and you've never really started living. You're getting older, but that doesn't mean that's real life, at least not the kind that I want to have. So I know it's scary. I know there's some fear, but as you said, sometimes God has a way of pushing you. I'd rather go willingly than be pushed. you know, wealth and success looks different for everybody. So don't chase money, chase your purpose.
Amen to that. All right, Alex, man, I really appreciate you. I've had a lot of fun talking with you, and I'm glad that you made this happen. So you were persistent. So,
yes, sir.
You. How do we get a hold of you? How do we find you if we want to have you come speak or get a hold of your book or anything like that?
Yes. So my catch-all website is Alex R. McElroy. So it's Alex R. McElroy.com. AlexRMcElroy.com. And then you can get to the blog from there. You can book for speaking engagements, host a workshop, get a copy of my book. My book is Blueprint for Bible Basics, which is designed to teach us primarily our youth the foundational concepts of the faith. There's some apologetic information in there as well. You can get that through the website or on Amazon on the Kindle version.
And then I want my signed copy, brother. I don't have one.
I will send it to you.
Come on.
Twitter, Instagram, Pastor A. McElroy. I think Facebook is, if you go to my fan page, it's just my name, Alex McElroy. So the main thing, go to the website. You can find everything there, alexrmcelroy.com.
I enjoy it, man. Thank you so much. So Alex, I just want to honor you, man. I thank you so much for what you're doing, that you are pursuing passion and purpose, that you're going after you know, the gifts and the talents that God has put inside of you. I just, that excites me. But what really gets me excited is the thought that you're impacting culture and society, and you're making a difference and bigger than you even know. And I just think your future is bright, and it's just going to explode in front of you. And I'm excited for you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate everything you do as well.
Absolutely. All right, man. Hold on just a second. Roar Nation. I hope that got you excited, because I'm excited. I'm ready to go conquer my day. It's like lighting a match and putting some gasoline on it and making things happen, man. I'm just ready to see an explosion of what God wants to do in your life, what he's doing in mine and Alex's and just people around us. Because God has put it in you to be the difference. Just be the change. And go out and just do something. And if you don't know what it is, man, the Bible is full of just basics, just to say, you know, be patient and kind and loving to people. And man, you would be shocked at just doing those things, how much it impacts people around you. So I just encourage you to go be the change today at work, at school, wherever you're at. Just go make a difference. So Roar Nation, I would love to hear your stories. I want to read your testimonies. I want to read them on our podcast. I want to share them on Facebook, things that God's doing in your life. So please take the time, share those with us. I want to hear about them, and maybe get you an opportunity to come on the show and share it as well. So Roar Nation, we love you. Remember, please rate and review us on Facebook, and remember, be real, be authentic, and be you. God bless.
That's all for this episode of Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You. Be sure to go to areyoureal.org for your free questionnaire to identify your gifts and talents and how you can use them to help people become leaders and catapult them into their destiny to help others become the leaders of tomorrow. We appreciate you spending your time with us and look forward to helping you reach out and revolutionize next time on Are You Real? Finding the Authentic You.